The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, a fan talking to you guys about the things you guys want to talk about. Let me just say that this is a great show. I'm glad to have it. It's on the MLW Radio Network and brought to you by my partners over at WrestleZone.com, which is the most widely read internet news site in the world. And it's my honor to sit here every week and have thousands of people listening to me as a fan. Everybody out there is a fan. Everybody out there is just as qualified as me to have a podcast about wrestling. But for some reason, you guys listen to me, and I appreciate it. So this week, I think I'm going to make some enemies. Now, if you've been listening to me this long or long at all, you know I really, number one, don't care about what people think. And I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to be true to myself. And also, I do have a penchant for making enemies, to being disliked. I think a lot of it is in the way I say things. A lot of it is the fact I'm honest. I don't think that's it, though. I think sometimes my opinions aren't other people's opinions. And also, the wrestling world is a strange one. And the world itself, the normal world, is one sometimes I have trouble navigating. And the wrestling world, definitely as well. So what new enemies am I going to make this week? I don't know about new enemies. I don't think many of these people like me anyway. I do like Vince Russo, and I do like the show that we did, Truth with Consequences, but I'm going to talk a little bit about the direction that the show has gone in since I left. I am 100% sure that I'm glad I did, because I don't think I was a strong enough force to keep it from going in the direction that it went. Also, I'm going to talk a little bit about Dave Meltzer and the relationship with AEW. There's a definite conflict of interest there. There's been some talk, and I think I found a smoking gun, and the story itself was broken by one, Dave Meltzer. I'm also going to talk a little bit about Ring of Honor and the New Japan relationship and why it sucks, and why some people involved in it think it sucks, and maybe something that can be done. And that's what we're going to talk about this week. But let's make some enemies this week on Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. I'm going to start by talking about Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling and the chances they've had and the chances they've blown. Now, I had Kerry Silken on as a guest, and I like Kerry. I consider Kerry a friend, and I actually taped an entire thing about me talking about how terrible the show was at MSG, but I felt bad doing it on the same day that Kerry agreed to give me an interview because he was so jacked about it. You know, Kerry is no longer the owner of ROH, but he's the ambassador, and he's such a advocate for them, and he was so happy. But it was a terrible, terrible blown opportunity. First of all, people bought tickets because they thought the Elite were going to be there. The tickets went on sale way before the talk was that the Elite, Cody, Hangman, and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega were not going to be associated with Ring of Honor anymore. That wasn't really a thing when the tickets went on sale, although they were very careful not to advertise them being part of that show. But that's part of it. So let's say they weren't part of it. And we find out that they're not going to be on the show, but it is a New Japan show, so we're all pretty excited. Get to see Okada, get to see Ishii, and get to see Suzuki, and all these guys that are kind of getting a foothold, that are catching fire. New Japan is catching fire. Ring of Honor is not catching fire. But Ring of Honor could catch fire if they were smart enough to kind of get a hold of that kind of magic that New Japan has right now. And it's true, New Japan's, you know, streaming service has multiplied many times over in subscriptions from the US in the last couple of years. A lot of it due to Chris Jericho and a lot of it due to Kenny Omega. So onto the show, the MSG show was a chance to highlight these New Japan wrestlers. I've talked to New Japan wrestlers about this, and they feel very much the same way. It was too much Ring of Honor, and the Ring of Honor stuff really dragged down the show. This was the one chance. This was their shot. MSG, WrestleMania weekend. They could have made the most of it. Hey, let me ask you a question. Who's talking about that show now? No one is talking about that show now because they had the opportunity and they blew it. Here's one example. Marty Scurll is the most over guy in Ring of Honor. Marty Scurll is. Absolutely, no doubt at all. So if they're going to feature somebody who's a Ring of Honor talent, they should have put the title on him. The Matt Taven thing went over like a fart in church live, and it made no headlines. But Marty getting the title, that would have made some headlines. What about Bully Ray's Open Challenge? Great idea. Bully Ray's Open Challenge. It got so muddled because Juice Robinson answered it before the show, but then it turned into a tag team match of some type involving Lifeblood, and there's some confusion about who's in Lifeblood or who they are. And let me tell you, if Bubba does an open challenge and a New Japan guy answers it, Ishii answers it, or Suzuki answers it, everybody would be talking about it. It would have been good for Ring of Honor. It would have been good for New Japan. It would have made that show mean something. On top of that, Enzo and Cass, you know, Enzo and Cass coming in, of course they suffered from the bad timing of the Bret Hart thing happening in real time about an hour before that. So people wondering what the hell's going on with all of that. But it really took away from the show. And also, I think a couple of wrestlers, Tama Tonga maybe, didn't even know what was going on because they didn't even, you know, even acknowledge those guys running in. They just left the ring. And it, once again, it was a big swing and a miss. And it was a bigger swing and a miss, as I said before, because this was their opportunity. WrestleMania weekend, Ring of Honor could have got a foothold, could have caught fire the way All Elite Wrestling has done. And it didn't. It's gone. No one remembers it. No one's talking about it. And this New Japan relationship with Ring of Honor, it came out recently. I think it was like, you know, I'm not sure it was Meltzer. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. But it was a story about how Juice Robinson felt about Ring of Honor. He didn't want to do any more Ring of Honor. He didn't like Lifeblood, which is the faction he was put in because it made no sense. And that was something that I personally have confirmed with other people who would know, who were in either Ring of Honor or New Japan, that the Ring of or the New Japan wrestlers are not digging the product of Ring of Honor and do not want to be involved with it at all. I don't blame them. I think that All Elite, in a lot of ways, in the minds of some, burned some bridges with the fact that they're starting a new company, because who the hell wants to compete with somebody if they weren't competing with them before? But it would really behoove New Japan to work with All Elite. I'm not saying, I don't know what to do with Ring of Honor, man. It's a company that's been around a long time. It's got a great history. It's had its shot. But let me tell you, it really blew it with this Madison Square Garden show. And then this partnership with New Japan, they're not making the New Japan guys happy. They're not taking advantage of it. And here's the final example of it. Here's the best example of why I think it's time for Ring of Honor New Japan to think about their partnership. I went to All In. All In was a sold-out, packed crowd. Packed crowd. It was exciting. It had great wrestlers. It had great matches, great angles. Everybody knew the angles. I didn't really know a couple of the angles because I didn't really watch Being the Elite, but my son did. So when Joey Ryan comes out, all weekend he's talking about Joey Ryan and Hangman and all these different angles going on, but and everybody in the crowd knew it too, and they were invested, and they wanted to see everything that, you know, and the thing with Flip and all the stuff that was going on. So a month later, I just happened to be in Vegas for the first Ring of Honor pay-per-view that took place after All In. The same guys. Okada was there. Omega was there. Cody was there. Young Bucks were there. There was like 800 fans there. And we're talking a building that could hold much more. I forget where it was at. It might have been at the MGM Grand, but I don't think so. But it was a building that was tarped off significantly for this very small crowd of the same guys that were in All In. So why is All In able to sell out and get this exciting word of mouth and catch fire, but Ring of Honor, 800 people with the same dudes? Crazy. So that is me kind of shitting a little bit on Ring of Honor. I hope they get their act together. I hope New Japan finds this partnership fruitful, because right now it looks like, you know, and another good indication of this is the fact that the Dallas tickets for G1 are having trouble selling. Let me tell you, there's no reason that should have trouble selling at all. No reason at all. And I'm not saying Ring of Honor is fully to blame for that, but it's not unrelated. We'll be right back. let's talk a little bit about Vince Russo's Truth with Consequences. Now, as you may know, I was the co-host on that show for a while, came up with the idea for it with Vince, the direction, all that stuff, and the show was growing. As a matter of fact, the last three episodes that I did were the three most downloaded episodes. And the last show that I did before I announced I was leaving was definitely the most popular show that we ever did. And things were moving up. It was moving up slowly, but it was moving up. And I told you before, it had nothing to do with the trolls, except the shrinking of the audience. The idea was I wanted a bigger podcast with more numbers. And I saw that Vince was kind of embracing these elements in the audience, which would limit the audience and would not make the show as successful as I need it to be for it to be worth my time. Not to be a dick, but I'm not Conrad, this super successful podcaster. I do have interests outside of podcasting. So if I'm going to do a show, it needs to be worth my time. And a couple things happened that let me know it wasn't. One is that this show, Total Engagement, got as many downloads as Truth with Consequences, which was like such a freaking eye-opener for me. It's no knock on Vince. It's just told me that, well, I mean, if Matt Kuhn by himself can do the same numbers, then me trying to launch this show with Vince from my end is a failure. Not from Vince's end, but from mine is a failure. And the whole time I was working on the show with Vince, there was conflict going on with me and Vince, not personally. Like, we always got along, except for once, you know, when the whole thing, when I went after Jeff Lane, because Jeff called me a liar when I was telling the truth, you know, about castrating the marks, or what Vince said about castrating the marks. And when Jeff called me a liar, I went at him, and then things blew up, and then we were mad at each other for like a week or something. But besides that, we got along. But in the direction of the show, Vince was convinced that the audience wasn't there for a show like I wanted to do, which was, you know, kind of just a ripoff of Conrad's format, basically, with his blessing. And Vince always wanted to kind of change directions. He booked podcasts like he booked wrestling. You know, he would get an idea, see a small trend or think of a small trend and then go in that direction. And it was constantly fighting with that. And if you look at, you know, the themes of the shows, you can see, you know, Matt's idea. Vince convinces me to do something else. You know, Matt's idea. Vince convinces me to do something else. And it really played with our downloads. My thinking was that if we stayed with the same format, it would increase slowly, and it always seemed to. But Vince got impatient, I think, because the growth was slow. So he always wanted to do like the Mark episode, or he wanted to do one episode with me and Jeff on it. And I'm like, well, fuck no, I'm not doing that. That's stupid, because it's going to shrink the audience down. I don't care. I mean, Jeff can be on the podcast. I don't mind. I like Jeff, but I know that it's a small audience, and I wanted to grow it. And sure enough, you know, as soon as I leave the show, Vince, you know, has the idea, or I give him the idea to have rotating co-hosts, you know. So the first ones with Stevie Ray, and that was a fun show. I listened to it. I thought Stevie was good, and I thought it was a good direction to go in. And then, but if I were a betting man, I would bet you $1 million that the downloads weren't there. Like when I was on the show, not because of me. Stevie Ray would be a much better co-host than me. Actually, even with the old format, because he's very engaging, he's very funny, he's a Hall of Famer, and I'm a nobody. But I would bet $1 million. You know, it went down probably significantly. And then the next week was that weird, is AEW and WWE working together? I will say, for people that say that Vince doesn't believe that and he's just doing it for ratings or whatever, when I talked to him about it, he believed it. Now, it seems he lost faith in it because it's fucking ridiculous and Vince is not an idiot. But the fact that, you know, AEW, you know, working with WWE, it's like this sexy idea that's not in reality at all. It's fantasy land. There's no way. If you were to just tell you why right now, it's because it's a publicly traded company. And they're not going to go with they're not going to work with a competitor who's on it going to be on a different TV network. I believe it would be illegal. And I also believe that Vince's, McMahon's ego would not allow it at all. There's absolutely no way that would happen. And it's ridiculous, but you know, Vince brought on the Conspiracy Horsemen. I like those guys to talk about that, but I didn't listen to that show. And not sure too many people did, except his brand members who are very loyal. And then this week, to my dismay, you know, the entire point of the show in my mind was to show a different side of Vince. And the entire point of the show in Vince's mind was to give a bigger platform to Realm and his brand, which I was totally co-signed on because I wanted Vince to be successful. The idea was for the show to lead to success for Vince and lead to success for myself. But the fact that this week he put Castering the Marks, which is the show that's on his Russo's brand, which is basically just attacking attacking writers. I know Vince would say we're just making fun of them, but you know, it's just, you know, when you say they're marks and they're hobbyists, and then these are professional writers that do this for a living. And even if when I read the bio of it, I was just like, man, this is just so negative, and it's so not who Vince wants to be in a lot of ways. But I think he knows that that's kind of what gets his guys, his brand, riled up. That's what makes him the money for the small audience. And if I were a bet again, I would guarantee that that show did nowhere near the numbers of the show that we did. And I keep saying the numbers because that was the entire point, was to get more people to hear Vince in a different way. The Vince that I talked to on the phone, not this guy who sounds so hateful and bitter on Castering the Marks. And Vince, you do sound hateful and bitter on Castering the Marks when you're going after these guys, you know, and whether you're justified or not in going after them, and then wrapping it up in this whole we're just having fun thing when it's not fun, it's negative. You know, a wrestler who worked with Vince Russo, worked with him in his height, and I'm not talking about D'Lo, by the way, because I talk to D'Lo all the time, and I think you guys know that, but actually a bigger name than D'Lo, a Hall of Famer, reached out to me. And he said, dude, I'm so glad you're not with that show anymore. It is so negative. Vince is so negative. And I said, what do you mean? You know, because I'm always, when people reach out privately and kind of attack Vince a little bit, I kind of tend to defend him a little bit because I think he just gets enough. And I hate to see, it's easy to pick on Vince and sometimes it's bullshit. But in this case, it's not. It's somebody that knows him really well. And someone who worked with him very closely, and someone that Vince has a lot of respect for, and he has respect for Vince. But he said, dude, I'm so glad you're away from that. I'm so glad you're away from this negativity. And I was a little shocked, and I'm like, what do you mean negativity? He goes, Castering the Marks, it's the most negative show, and it is, and it seemed in his mind, I think, like I was defending Castering the Marks, which he might not know that I've been a critic of it for a long time. But this is someone, you know, who was in the Attitude Era and someone who, you know, knows Vince and has heard the criticisms over the years, but he's thinking Castering the Marks is this terrible, negative show. I do too. But I also understand that it's a way for Vince to make money, and it allows him to fleece the real marks, which are, you know, people that pay for content from a wrestling writer from 20 years ago. And I'm not saying that to crap on Vince, because Vince would say he's a wrestling writer from 20 years ago when he talks about people attacking him. You know, why would people attack me? Even the Meltzers or whatever. Why would people attack me? I was a wrestling writer from 20 years ago, you know, but that's his fan base, are the fans that will pay for content to think that they're a friend of this wrestling writer from 20 years ago. And those are the real marks. I mean, those are the ones who are paying money to hear this stuff. But our show, kind of the legacy of Truth With Consequences, was kind of destroyed this week by bringing that onto it. And I went on Castering the Marks once, and I didn't laugh and ha-ha along. I fought him on every way, and I did this in a respectful way. And, you know, I know Jeff likes to say, and I know people probably tweet Jeff, but Jeff likes to say, the show's not out of context. The show is, if it's out of context, we don't have a show, because Jeff sees himself as someone with a lot of integrity and a lot of credibility. I'm not taking that away from him, because I think Jeff's a good dude. But the reality is, when I was on Castering the Marks, the first thing they talked about was something that was completely out of context. It was a tweet from Bruce Mitchell about Scott Dawson acting like it's real. And he's like, Matt, are you trying to say that it's not real? Or are you trying to say they don't think it's real? And of course, that's the most idiotic thing when you say that these writers think that it's real, you know? And then I had to explain, well, Bruce is from North Carolina, and Bruce knows the Dawson brothers, which were a tag team, including Zane Dawson, and they were associated with Scott Dawson, so there's a long-time relationship there, and it's a ha-ha joke. And as soon as I said that, they're like, oh. And it just shows that that particular thing was out of context. And you know, once again, it's no slam on Jeff or Vince for doing that show, but to say it's not out of context when these guys, you know, if a Brian Alvarez, for instance, you know, records 20 hours of audio a week and somebody sends you a 5-minute clip for you to pull 30 seconds out of, it is out of context in the sense that they're not talking about Vince the whole time. And when they say a bad comment about Vince, that's what is pulled, or they're not talking about, you know what I'm saying. They're not talking about like wrestling being real. They'll have a second where Meltzer will talk about how many, the move he likes or the psychology of the match. If you take it by itself, it sounds like Meltzer's a total nutcase, but he's talking about it in the context of an hour long show where he's doing a lot of facts and figures and a lot of reporting. And in that sense, it is out of context, but I don't want to revisit that argument. I do want to revisit the fact that it saddens me that that negative show and that that side of Vince is what's highlighted on the show that we work so hard to create. But I do know he's going to make a living off of it because that is the target, which is the real marks. But of course, with Vince, I still consider him a friend. If he called me tomorrow, I would pick up the call. If he asked me for a favor, I'd probably do it. And I do want to, I always want to say this for those people who look to shit on Vince or say he was a terrible person. He's not. For people who say he ruined WCW, I think we proved he didn't. It was gone much before he got there. Every book you've ever read about WCW says the same thing. You know, even people that didn't like him at the time, from Kevin Sullivan to J.J. Dillon, you know, they've said that it was already done by the time Vince got there. And also even Eric Bischoff has said that. And the real drop-off in fans, in TV viewership, pay-per-view buys, house shows, all that took the vast majority of that took place way before Vince got there. And the other stuff about Vince, the personal shit, it needs to stop. Like, it's not nice. And just because, here's the thing, when Vince is able to rationalize himself making, for instance, a negative painting about somebody, and he says, well, this is the least I can do. They attack me. And he kind of rationalizes it to himself like that. You know, why can't I just paint if they're going to talk shit about me? I believe it's a personal attack when Vince does it, and I believe it's a personal attack when they do it. I believe if they're going to say something like, you know, Vince Russo's a loser, I think it's unfair, and there's no way you can rationalize it to yourself, whether it's Vince doing it or whether it's them doing it. They should stop. It's wrestling. It's about the wrestling they don't like. They don't like the way Vince books. Be upfront with that, and that's all it is. At the same time, Vince doesn't own up to his anger about the criticism as much as maybe he could, because to me, that's the basis of casting the marks and that kind of stuff. And he can feel rationalized in that view. But once again, if Vince is the person he wants to be, and I know this about him, then he shouldn't allow himself to be provoked into such negativity. So I kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but just to say that I think if the numbers, I'm betting money that the numbers would indicate that I was right, that the show would have reached a bigger audience. We'd have kept doing it my way. But the reality is, just like Louis C.K. says about marriage, no great marriage ever ended in divorce, and no great podcast ever ended because someone decided to walk away. It wasn't a great podcast. It was pretty good sometimes. But I wish Vince all the luck, and probably the last, maybe not the last thing. Here's maybe the last thing I'll say is that, you know, there's a few people that were totally over the line, you know, losers, basically, people that, you know, some that hid their identity. One that doesn't hide his identity most of the time. He's got a podcast, but he hides behind like a Matt Coon troll account and talks shit. And once I found out who he was, I let him know, and he sold his StarCast ticket because he knew I was going to be there, which is hilarious. But those were the elements like he didn't acknowledge because he knew that they were harassing me and stalking me and all this stuff. None of that actually bothered me. I actually kind of enjoyed it, and I still do because, you know, they're losers. But Vince has very much embraced those people back into the fold again because, like I said, they're marks, you know. And I will say that one of these people, the one I'm talking about, who hid under a fake name to troll me, I will say I did have a conversation with Vince about that person once. And I'm not going to say the person's name because I'll never put him over. But he said that this person was whining and crying because people were criticizing him on social media. And could I say something nice on the podcast about him? And I said to him, I said, is this person, I used his name, is he that much of a bitch? And Vince said, yes. So you know who you are, and you're a bitch, and Vince thinks you are too. So that's the truth with consequences. For those of you who tune in to hear a positive show, I guess this isn't that positive show, and I'm sorry, but it's reality, it's life. Things aren't always positive. God, I sound like Vince now, but it is life. And I do want to kind of center this show around this particular subject, and that is Mr. Dave Meltzer and AEW. And is Mr. Meltzer biased? Is he compromised when it comes to All Elite Wrestling? So let's examine this issue a little bit. First of all, oh my God, this is just so, this is really, it, I don't think Dave is like this guy who's lying. I really don't. I do think he is the most excited fanboy in the world for AEW. I guess the best corollary I can draw is he's like Sean Hannity to Donald Trump, or if you can think of a liberal, I'm not trying to be political, but let's say like Rachel Maddow to Obama. To that end, it's kind of an inaccurate picture because Dave is not supposed to be a Sean Hannity to Donald Trump. He's supposed to be a wrestling reporter, and he's the greatest wrestling reporter of all time. All of his reporting is fantastic, but it's the interpretation of the facts that sometimes Dave gets a little bit lost and the bias shows a little bit. You know, it's never the facts and figures and the story breaking and all that stuff. It's like when Vince goes off about Dave not being a real reporter. That's bullshit. Dave's a great reporter. Read any of the obituaries in The Observer. And don't go by his Twitter, by the way. The Dave that uses the Twitter is not the reporter. Like, that's just Dave Meltzer, the person. And you can tell he flies off the handle. He reacts to shit. He's very condescending. I can be the same way on Twitter. That me on Twitter is not me in real life. So when people see Dave stuff and get all triggered because of that, that's not who he is. He's a great reporter. But the interpretation of these facts, the interpretation of the reporting is where Dave goes astray. And we saw no greater example than this week. And we're going to get to the smoking gun in a second, where I'm going to prove that Dave is a consultant for AEW. I'm going to prove it. But let's get to this first subject, the interpretation, and how it is kind of putting out facts out there. The Forbes reported that, you know, based off a third party other wrestling site that quoted Dave, that they could have sold 137,000 tickets to All Out. Let's take you back to Double or Nothing. So in Double or Nothing, when they sold the tickets, they had what was called a queue, meaning if you signed on before noon on the day of the sale, you were randomly put in a waiting list to buy tickets. And so, you know, that particular one for Double or Nothing, there was 22,000 codes asked for. 12,000 seats were sold to the first 4,100 people who signed in. Dave reports, facts and figures, I believe all that. At the time the ticket sales were closed, he said, there were another 11,000 people waiting to order. Now, this is where the interpretation gets all fucked up. Because he said, had the building been big enough, they would have been able to sell 43,500 tickets that day. So first of all, let me just say, AEW is kicking ass. AEW is exceeding expectations. AEW is on the rise, and I still have nothing but massive predictions of massive success for them. It's not about AEW. This is about Dave. So the interpretation of that being they would be able to sell 43,500 tickets that day, it's making a ton of assumptions. The first assumption is that the ratio of people buying tickets would stay the same. To say that all those 11,000 people waiting to order would have all bought seats at the exact same ratio is insane. Now, let's look at some facts. Some people log on with no intention to buy tickets. They just want to see the prices. A lot of people log on. They might want to buy tickets later, maybe. A lot of people, myself included, logged on with several browsers and got several codes. I had five browsers open. Many of those people were going to be different. were different browsers by the same people. Many of them would have been. So now, fast forward to last week, All Out goes on sale. A wild success. Sells out in 15 minutes. 72,000 people, according to Dave, which I believe, are in the queue when it goes on sale. And of course, he's assuming that all 72,000 people are different people and all of them are looking to buy tickets. And Dave is saying it is such a fact that Forbes picked it up, that they would have sold 137,000 seats. They would have sold 137,000 tickets. And it was the, he had never heard of any wrestling show that this many people had this many people looking for tickets, because at one time he saw 72,000 people waiting in the queue. Now, once again, a lot of if I'm saying a lot of people are just looky-loos, and I believe there were, and a lot of people had open browsers, okay, I can't prove any of that, but you certainly can't prove that they were going to buy tickets. Every one of those people was going to buy tickets the exact same ratio. It's not even scientific to the point where you can extrapolate it as kind of an estimate, and anything outside of a wild, loose estimate. And on top of that, he wasn't even sure of the exact numbers. It was 5,000 or 6,000 people who were able to log in and get tickets. Not sure about it. Looking back at Double or Nothing, he had the fact that there were 11,000 people waiting to order. He had that. He didn't have those numbers left about who was left afterwards. So a couple of things. Number one, he is assuming that everybody's going to do the same ratio. Number two, he doesn't even know how many tickets were waiting at the end of the sale. And number three, he's reporting it like it's gospel and that people are picking it up. And it really mutes the actual success of AEW. What they did was fantastic and tremendous, and there's no way to talk it down unless you overestimate it. It's like when you get a great deal on something and you go to your friend, you go, guess how much I paid for this? And you pay like 10 bucks and you're proud. He's like, what, $4? And you're like, God damn it, you undershot it. That's what Dave's doing with these numbers. And it's the interpretation. It's this wildly fantastical, optimistic interpretation of these numbers because he's such a fan of AEW. And he's good friends, I believe, with these guys at AEW. And he really wants them to succeed because he really believes they're good people. So it doesn't come from a bad place, but it certainly doesn't come from a place where you can call him an unbiased news journalist when it comes to AEW. And then by extension, you know, if you're giving them all the great pub, you're probably not looking at other people fairly, you know. And you know, that relates to the fact that, is there a bias here with AEW? You know, the fact is, Dave has a lot of information. I don't think he's letting any secret about this. He has a lot of information he can't give out. And then once the story breaks for AEW, he gives all the information he has. You know, it's not like he's breaking stories for AEW or independently researching things. He's being given all the information by his friends, and then he's being told, hey, this is off the record, but you can tell them this when this comes out, or this is off the record, and you can say it at this certain date. That's not irregular in journalism, by the way. That's a pretty normal thing. But the fact that the relationship is so integrated, the fact that AEW is such a big story, it does give you pause as to whether Dave is the credible journalist, especially in his interpretation of numbers, interpretation of the reporting. I don't think it's something you can trust. And I think we can say at this point that Dave is a consultant for All Elite Wrestling. So if you want to take a story out of this podcast, it's a fact. Dave is a consultant. Now, when I say that, I don't think he's a paid consultant, but when people started making this criticism a few months ago, you know, Sean Sapp from Fightful came out and said, I think he talked to Dave, and he said, Dave is not a consultant. He doesn't work for AEW. Dave is not a consultant, paid or unpaid, by All Elite Wrestling. Problem with that. The greatest wrestling reporter of all time, Mr. Dave Meltzer, happened to report on his Wrestling Observer Radio a couple months ago when the Pac story came out. Pac was unable to come, and there was a lot of scenarios being bandied about how to resolve the situation because, as Dave reported, not that he wouldn't lose to Adam Page, but once he beat Adam Page, he probably wouldn't lose to the next person, which would have to be Omega. So they figured out right before the show that this shit isn't going to work, and a lot of scenarios are being pitched to figure it out. And Dave said, I even pitched some scenarios. I even told him what I thought they should do.
So having said that, now everyone's going to go, oh, God, you're just defending them, which, by the way, I haven't done. I've just explained the situation on why they made these decisions. And I did suggest other things, and other people did. This was the decision they made, whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision.
If that's not a consultant, I don't know what is. Dave said that himself, and no one picked that up. But the fact of the matter is that if Dave is saying that he pitched ideas to them and they decided what to do, he was consultant. I mean, he consulted with them. He doesn't do that with WWE. He didn't do that with WCW. He is not pitching ideas of like, oh shit, when Mike Awesome left ECW, he's not talking to Paul Heyman and going, well, here's an idea of what we should do. So he's definitely a consultant with All Elite Wrestling. I talked to somebody this week who is a big critic of Dave. Not a critic, but kind of a critic. You might know his name, but I'm not going to say it. But he was saying, yeah, there's no doubt that Dave's a consultant, you know, in any real interpretation of that word. So the final thing is, does it really fucking matter? It really doesn't in the big picture, because in the big picture of All Elite Wrestling becoming a multi-million dollar company and being profitable in a couple of years and having a TV deal and having pay-per-views, they're going to be much bigger than a wrestling reporter. You know, they need to catch fire outside of wrestling. So it doesn't really go to a success or lack of success. I also, you know, getting into are they working, Dave, kind of thing, I don't think so. I think they are guys trying to have a company. They have a friend named Dave who actually writes the Wrestling Observer. I don't think they're working him. I don't think there's anything evil or, you know, negative going on here. But I think there's no doubt that Dave has a bias. It is leading him to put out misleading facts and figures sometimes, and to shine an apple up a certain way. And he's definitely a consultant with All Elite Wrestling, whether they know it or not, because he has said so. All right, well, hey, do me a favor, guys. Give me some feedback on this episode. If you didn't like the episode, you don't have to really give me feedback. It's fine. But if you love the episode, go ahead and give me some feedback. Reach out to me on Twitter at Matt Coon Music, or for the show at Matt Coon TE. I made some enemies this week by telling my truth. I tried to be as diplomatic as I could, but at the same time, I didn't want to fucking be a pussy and not say what was on my mind, because I'm just a fan. Now, I'm lucky that I've been on the other side of the curtain a few times. I don't want to be spit back out of that room, but at the same time, I think I owe more honesty to you fellow fans than I do deference to the people that have let me behind the curtain. And I don't think I gave away any trade secrets or anything, but I want to thank you for listening to Total Engagement. Thank Court Bauer and MLW Radio for putting me on, and thank WrestleZone.com for partnering me up. Sorry I haven't given you too many news stories this time. It's completely a Matt Coon take show, and I hope I didn't make an enemy out of you, and I hope you turn in next week, or tune in next week. Do you tune in to podcasts? That's a question. I don't think so. Let me try it again. And I hope you download us next week or stream us on Total Engagement with Matt Coon. Thanks a lot, everybody.